Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Escape Maker, hosting the Women in Food and Farming Festival on May 8th and 9th. Learn more at womennourish.com.
This episode is presented by Chemists in the Kitchen by LabX, a love letter to science, cooking, and individuality. Subscribe for free at youtube.com/labxnas.
This week on Meat and Three, we're turning an eye to food at its trickiest, from imitation olive oil to the pretensions of 3D printers.
We were just doing like a birthday party for one of the employees, and we printed a steak just for fun.
You know, a grape Jolly Rancher isn't going to satisfy your craving for grapes. So, I mean, in a sense, it kind of multiplies the sensory qualities that we can love in the world.
So basically, you culture the cell in a bioreactor, it grows, and then ultimately at the end, you come out with a piece of meat.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. Hope everyone is taking care of themselves, taking space for your mental health, checking in with friends and family. If you need help or resources, please go to heritageradionetwork.org. We are so happy to be sitting down with our longtime friend and the legendary pizza czar himself, Anthony Falco, who has a new cookbook out, his first cookbook out, Pizza Czar, out on Abrams, which is available for pre-order. We have a great conversation about his journey through pizza, traveling the world for pizza, the benefits of a great white pizza, and just when it's appropriate, if ever, to name a pizza after yourself. And then we dig into the Brooklyn Archives, where we hang out with X and Y, one of our two favorite people to swing into the studio, and a all-time classic performance on Snacky Tunes. So here we go. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes on HRN.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Keep
Anthony, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Always so good down to sit with you. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. And yeah, thanks for the book. I mean, for checking it out. It's a long time in the making and very, very happy to have it finally get out in the world.
Yeah. You know, you talk about, and this is later in the book, about international consulting as part of your big job and how you don't like to really do improvements. You really are drawn to new projects because you like working on concepts from the ground up. And as you sit here with your first book, what is it about new projects and a new venture that excites you the most?
Yeah, it's starting a restaurant from scratch and creating a cookbook. There's a lot of similarities, actually. You know, I mean, it's like there's like just the name of the book, Pizza Czar, and then it has my name at the bottom. But there's so many people that, you know, were a part of it. And I think that's like a restaurant too. Like there's the name of the restaurant and there's the chef and that's what people know. And, you know, but that is definitely something that I felt like was a similarity is there's just, it takes just such a huge team to really make it happen and get it across the finish line. But yeah, in my consulting life, I don't like to fix people's, it's just not what I do. There's other people that do that. Like if there's something wrong with your pizza or your restaurant, then it's probably, you know, it's probably a reason. And, you know, I just prefer to start from scratch because also that really is what, you know, that's what my skill set is, you know, like that's kind of what being the pizza czar was about was like, yeah, I'm not always just in my whites in the kitchen. There's other people that were doing that. Like sometimes I'm driving a refrigerated truck. Like sometimes I'm pouring over architectural designs or going to a factory to look at some kind of new piece of equipment or touring a flour mill or a mozzarella plant or something like that. So it's kind of like starting a project from scratch. You know, it really utilizes all those skills. And then it allows me to do the most important thing for these projects to be successful is to pick the right clients, you know, like, and I think that's, I've been very lucky to have just a list of like super, just awesome clients around the world. Started with my first client in Brazil who are operators.
Shout out.
Yeah. Shout out to Braz Electrica and the whole team of partners there. I mean, it's a giant company and they're just operators. Like they're like the Union Square Hospitality of Brazil. So like they knew exactly what they wanted from me. And then they are able to do all the other stuff. And, you know, we were able to make a project that was amazing. And we found a great chef in Paul Cho. I mean, super, super talented chef. For 4 years, we've collaborated in person and then remotely. And, you know, I mean, that's really the name of the game is principals who are committed operators. And then an on-the-ground chef who is going to work with me, you know, to collaborate on the project where, you know, they're on the daily in there executing. And I'm just kind of giving them all of my experience, you know, and mostly what I'm giving people are just all of the mistakes that I've made, you know.
I mean, that's sort of what I love about this book is that it really is. It's your story. I actually saw it as there's like four different ways into this book, right? You have the, I just want to make pizza at home, right? I want to get into the business of pizza, the consulting part, which you just touched on a little bit. You know, sort of where to eat pizza all over the world. Cause I was definitely taking notes of like, okay, when we can travel again, I'm getting a slice here. I'm getting a slice there. I was mad at myself because I was in Tokyo 5 years ago and I didn't know about a pizza place and I was kicking myself for something I didn't know existed. So, you know, a bit of a travel book. And then the final part, a philosophy book on pizza, right? Because there's a lot of like pontification. How did you, which is a lot for a book, but like, how did you take all of your knowledge, all of your personal experience and filter it into like one cohesive book?
Yeah. I mean, it was, it's a process, you know, and it evolved a lot, but I think one thing I had going for me is I've never really been a cookbook person. Like I never really learned. I never really like was one of those chefs who like, oh, this new cookbook came out and I'm reading it and cooking from it. I never like, I never really did that. I learned from other people I worked with. I learned from just trial and error. I had like the one cookbook that I really like took a lot from was Marcella Hazan's Essentials of Italian Cooking, because I feel like that just like gives you a base for Italian food and cooking Italian American and Italian food. It's like you can take any of those pasta dishes and like kind of then in a few steps have a pizza, you know, that is a great combination of flavors. So I really kind of looked at it, just was like, okay, well, I'm not trying to fit this into some like an existing paradigm of a cookbook. So I'll just do what I want to do. So there's like my illustrations are in there, you know, because I wanted, you know, I've always just been someone who drew, you know, and I wanted to put my drawings in a published book. That's like a dream come true for me. I wanted to tell stories because, like, you know, as I was writing the book, I was out doing this. And so it made sense to kind of tell the stories of the recipes that were being developed. And yeah, I mean, I just kind of threw it all down on paper and then like, with the idea of like, yes, I have a philosophy on pizza. I have a lot of ideas about pizza just from doing it for 15 years. Oh, yeah. And, you know, like one of the things that is a big part of it is like the four different styles of dough that are in there.
Sure.
And they all kind of represent history of the history of pizza. And then also they represent personal his pizza experience that I've had in my life.
And history of the world too. I mean, there's definitely some good understanding. Like, for example, the connection of unassumingly connected locations like Connecticut and Buenos Aires, you know, like having these parallels to the world where I'm just like, oh, I didn't understand, even all the way up to Toronto, where it's like, oh, you can see the migration of the world and why did they leave Italy? Well, it's the unification of Italy. And so like you get a little bit of a history lesson of it, but that's the great thing about food and doing a deep dive into one subject. You're like, yes, pizza is universal. And because it's so universal, this is a better way to understand the world and maybe the people in it.
Yeah. And it's also part of the fact that like I got this cookbook deal and I feel very lucky to have this opportunity. But I really was trying to like, okay, well, pizza's the thing that's given me this opportunity. But I'm gonna squeeze in my true passions in life. Like I said, I already talked about the drawing, but also history. Like that was like if I could have just done anything in my life, I probably would have just studied history and tried to become a history professor or something. I don't know how that would have worked out for me. Like I couldn't wait to get out of school. But when I in my personal life, that's what I read is history books, you know? And so,
yeah.
And then combining that with the travel, I feel like you can read as much, you can sit and read history and you can read books, but until you're confronted face to face with these, you know, things in real life, like for instance, I love Roman history. I think it's amazing. I read a lot of it, but until you see the size and scale of the Roman ruins, I mean, you just can't really wrap your head around it, you know? And like going, you know, Brazil was just this kind of idea in my brain that was like, didn't occupy a lot of space before I went there. It was like soccer and, you know, samba and, you know, like beaches and Rio, I think is what most people think. I didn't imagine myself going to Brazil. And so when I went there, you know, I mean, Rio was very cool, but like when I went to Sao Paulo, I was just instantly obsessed because here is basically like, you know, a city. I just didn't really realize like what a huge multicultural, international, massively influential global center Sao Paulo is. Mm. And as a food city, you know, there's not too many cities in the world where like are like New York, where there's like, you know, you want great sushi, you want great ramen, you want great, you know, tacos, you want Italian,
whatever you want,
anything you want. Like, you know, I love Mexico City. I think it's like one of my favorite cities in the world, but I mean, it's very much, you know, the capital of Mexico, you know? Yeah. And so like you can get any kind of Mexican food and there's great Chinese food and other stuff there, but it's not the same way. They have very much a culinary culture, you know, that, and Sao Paulo is like, it's very much a culture of immigrants from, you know, Japan and Italy and the Middle East. And those are kind of the foundations of the food scene there. And then there's all these international layers because it's such a big international city. So, like, you know, I just didn't realize that till I got there. And then, you know, it's it became something that has now been a lifelong kind of just connection for me. And I've made some of my best friends are there, and it's, you know, I learned a lot. And then circling back and reading books like 1491 and 1493 that are based on Alfred Crosby's, you know, kind of treaties on the Columbian Exchange and ecological imperialism, you know, you really start to go around the world and you see how these ingredients moved around, and that the entire world that we know and every food from every culture is completely influenced by this period of the last 500 years when these new world and old world ingredients got all mixed up. So I try to squeeze a little bit of that in there too.
It's great. I mean, it's fun because you can just walk away with a lot of different little nuggets, right? And that just keeps adding to it. It's like, wait, so when you make a pizza, you're like, I understand the history, I understand the approach, I understand the context, the people behind it and things like that, which is, you know, tough to do out of, say, a more standard cooking book or cookbook, as they're more commonly referred to, not a cooking book. But part of what I think allows it to happen is the design of the book and the flow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've known your artwork forever. I DM you all the time when you put up a cool drawing. But how are you able to – because, you know, that's not always the same in a standard endeavor as a chef or as a writer, that you also get to put your drawings in the book. Usually they're like, thank you so much, chef. We'll take it from here. So how did the artwork get in? How are you able to convince Abrams, the publisher, to let you do so many of your drawings and the layout of the book?
Yeah. I mean, partly that was just picking Abrams, you know, it's like, they they're small and they kind of, you know, that's like, I talked to some other publishers, but like Abrams to me, you know, I talked to some friends who had cookbooks with them and they're like, look, they're going to make you or let you make the book you want to make, you know? And then, you know, I mean, the way the flow works and everything, I mean, got to give a big shout out to Shannon Kelly, our editor.
Shout out.
Yeah. She, you know, did an incredible job. And the design, you know, there's my designs, and, you know, I think the part of it that really why it all works together is he's saying, the designer, she just also just killed it. She was able to take my, you know, I was probably of one of the few cookbook authors who was like sent font suites over, you know, to be like, like, I really love avant-garde, you know, we're going to have to put that in there. And she was cool with it and just ran with it. And we were able to do something that was collaborative, you know?
I love it. That collaboration is really what makes the best type of product. Now, before we go to break, I would love 30 seconds, a minute, on what I think is the number one takeaway of making the best pizza in the book. And it's not the ingredients. I mean, it is. And it's not the location, and it sort of is. But really what I read over and over again is consistency, right? And there's something about, like, stretching that dough, that Sisyphusian effort where you get up every day and you roll that ball of dough up the hill to stretch it out again and again. But why was it throughout your whole career and all of your work that consistency is the best ingredient for success?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of my pillars of success in the restaurant business is, like, number one is actually cleanliness. And, like, so number one is, like, all about being organized and clean and having your mise.
I mean, I saw cleanliness in the book, but that wasn't as, wasn't as fun to talk about.
Yeah. That's definitely, like, you know, that also kind of goes without saying, but consistency is the whole thing because,
yeah.
And there's a bit of contradiction in there in the book. And it's like, in the sense that I say, like, look, I mean, my biggest influence was someone who, culinary influence was my great grandmother, Lena, who you know, never measured anything out, never worked from a recipe, you know, but you're not my great grandmother, Lena. You have not just been cooking for people since you were a child. So you don't, her consistency comes out of a just, you know, like
she knows
dedication to just doing it every single day.
I bet if you looked at her ingredients and you parsed them out, it would be
sure
so much more consistent than we think it is.
Yeah. But so you're not her. So what do you do and how do you make great pizza? Well, it's like everything is going to be changing. Temperature, time, air pressure, flour, all this stuff. So like it's all about like mitigating that change by using something like a scale and a gram scale and setting timers and being as consistent as possible. But also if you – the part of that consistency too is if you vary off of that, just make a note of it because you could stumble on this. Like the other day I was making a book recipe from the cookbook, the Sicilian Grandma recipe. And, you know, you mix and then you rest and then you mix again. And then there's a 3-hour period of bulking where you do stretch and folds every 30 minutes. And then at the end of that, you're supposed to take the dough out and portion it and then let it relax and press it out into the pans. And so I fell asleep. I was like, I'm just gonna lay. It's like midnight. I'm just gonna lay down in my bed and I'll just nap and then I'll portion in 30 minutes. I didn't set a timer or anything. And I woke up the next day. And so the had been bulking overnight and the dough was very big. And I was like, oh shit, this is not how it's supposed to happen. But I portioned it up and I just went with it anyways. And it turned out great. So like, I'm kind of like, okay, well, this may be a new method. And the recipes from the start, when we started this cookbook 3 years ago to the final recipes, I mean, it's like, I would change them again right now if I could, you know, because it's like, yes, be super consistent, but at the same time, you know, be prepared to change. And the only way that's going to happen though, is if you're like taking notes of what's happening and you know, when you did make a change, that it should be the new standard operating procedure.
Yeah. Well, listen, when we get back, we're going to talk about some of those recipes and some of the approaches in the book. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
I killed a bear in Nepal for recreation. It was nothing at all. Let's compare scars. Check out the one on my back. Tips for survival in a panther attack. And so the beast got away. Not before I tagged him with my homing dart. Lives in the trees anyway. Won't be long before I tear this place apart. Tear this place apart. Tear this place apart. Tear this place apart. We met a mountain man while we were setting up camp. He had a rifle and he carried a lamp. Asked him where he's headed, he said somewhere up north. I asked him what he's doing and I said I'm rich and I'm bored. Travel the world for a change, looking for somewhere to hunt some game. Business is good, I can't complain, but city living has me going insane and I can't take anymore. Can't take anymore. laid a trap which this panther couldn't resist. I had to call it all off, continue the trip, it's a matter of timing. And so the beast got away, not before I tagged him with my homing dart. Lives in the trees anyway, won't be long before I tear this place apart.
This episode is brought to you by Escape Maker, hosting the Women in Food and Farming Festival. This Mother's Day weekend, May 8th and 9th, EscapeMaker.com will present the first annual Women in Food and Farming Festival at Stone Ridge Orchard in New York's Hudson Valley. That's just 2 hours outside of New York City in Ulster County. The two-day hybrid live and virtual event, open to the public, will honor and celebrate women-owned businesses in the food, farm, and craft beverage spaces, and provide entrepreneur resources. A live farmers market on May 8th will host dozens of women farmers and craft beverage and food producers, with products ranging from cakes and cookies, to fresh veggies and honey, to hot sauces and teas, all locally sourced and produced. For those not able to attend in person, there will be a virtual experience on May 9th. It will include 25 online tours, demos, and educational presentations on various topics on demand for the public and trade. Learn more at womennourish.com.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Anthony Falco, aka Pizza Czar, which is also the name of his first and new cookbook / philosophy book out on Abrams. You know, one of the best insights in the book, in addition to the consistency, is you talk about telling a story with your toppings, which I never actually thought about before, but I'm on the same camp of you. I am a edit your toppings, be smart about what you put on your pizza. I love the concept of like the dartboard pizza, which is sort of like the kitchen sink pizza, which is like throwing everything on it, which I can't stand. I'm like a two toppings at most guy, right?
Yeah.
But you know, you there's the like, oh, tell a story, and you're like, oh, okay, it's like tomatoes and spinach, but you go deeper than that, right? Because you talk about like pizza toppings in Brazil, how it's been around since 1911, and how you can actually tell the history of a place through the toppings on a pie.
Yeah.
Why is it important to understand both the topping combinations that exist and this, what they represent, but then also applying that mentality to when you're creating new pies as a pizza maker?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that is rooted in Italian and Italian-American cooking. I mean, if you think of just like pastas, the names of the pastas and dishes, you know, like they tell stories. Like carbonara, it's like a whatever, like a coal miner, like, you know, marinara. This is what a sailor eats when he comes on shore. And there's always little funny stories that go along with all these dishes. But then the other side of that is that you should think of all your ingredients as a cast of characters. And there should be a main character. Mm. There should be a protagonist. You know, like right now, I just went to the market this morning and, you know, I was hopeful for spring ingredients, but it was a little sparse. So I was only able to get some garlic chives and some green garlic, which green garlic's one of my favorite spring ingredients.
Oh yeah.
I love it. So what I'm going to do is make a pizza tonight, and it's, you know, green garlic is going to be the main character. Garlic in general is going to be in the main character. So I'm going to use regular garlic. I'm going to use green garlic. I'm going to use garlic chives. And so what I'm going to do is going to try to make like ultimate garlic bread, you know? So I'll take the garlic chives and I'll chop them up and I'll fold them into some fresh ricotta. And then I'll like roast some garlic bulbs, maybe in some butter. I don't know what I'm and like make some like garlic butter kind of thing. And then I'm going to have this green garlic, which is going to go raw on the base and cook underneath all of the cheese and the mozzarella. And then I'll do some Parmesan and some basil and some parsley on there. And it's like, it'll be you know, but I mean, when you go to the farmer's market and you get these garlic chives and the green garlic fresh, it's like there's going to, they deserve to be protagonist because it's not just garlic, you know, from the supermarket. I mean, it's like we're taking garlic in every stage of its, you know, like being, and we're translating it into something. And it's like, well, what's, everyone knows what the protagonist of garlic bread is, you know, it's garlic.
Yeah. Yeah. And that creative challenge is what also takes you to that another level. You know, I think that idea of just being like, this is what I have to work with. This is the story that I can tell because this is what the market and the season or the location has provided.
Yeah. So like in Brazil, there's this mashed potato pizza.
Yeah.
And,
You have a whole section on mashed potatoes and potatoes on pizza, which I grew up in. There was a place called Piece of Pizza that did like the weird combinations back in the 90s. And so I was like, I've seen starch on pizza before.
Yeah.
But if you've never had something like that, it can be a novel approach.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is like comes from being, you were there in the early days of
Roberta's.
I mean, it comes from being a stoner and just being like, yeah, you know, like, dude, let's do a mashed potato pizza. I love mashed potatoes. It's like one of my favorite foods. And one of the reasons I got into cooking, because like my mom was so bad at making mashed potatoes. I love you, Mom. I hope she doesn't listen to this, but she was so bad at making mashed potatoes that I just wanted to know, why were they good sometimes? Why did they come out gummy sometimes? Like, what is happening here?
And consistency.
Yeah, consistency. You know, like, so like, I love mashed potatoes, but then like, so we made this pizza in Brazil, and it was called the Super Tramp because Benny Novak, the chef, he's just like, he's also a musician and just like one of the coolest guys in the world. So like one of my favorite chefs, super, super talented Italian chef in Brazil, one of the partners at the company that I work with there. And, you know, we went around and I was eating a lot of food, like Brazilian food. And one of the things that I noticed is that eggs, first of all, is like, you know, all day, all the time.
Mm.
And that like, adding fried egg to lunch, adding a fried egg to dinner. It's like, which is great. You know, eggs are,
yeah,
and they have great eggs. So I wanted to do a pizza that featured eggs. And so we got some pancetta and then we did mashed potatoes and we called it the Super Tramp because that's breakfast in America is eggs and bacon and potatoes. But in Brazil, it's kind of like all day and it was going to be lunch. So we use the technique of splitting the whites and the yolks. And so you get these beautiful runny yolks on top with the fat and the mashed potatoes that suck them up. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, why not? You know, like,
I'm a breakfast all day type of guy. I'll do two eggs toast and potatoes for dinner.
Yeah.
If the situation calls for it. I was happy to also see in the book the love given to a good white pie.
Yes.
Because I will sometimes catch shit for ordering it. Mm. I've always held a high respect for it. But what I understand is that there's really good white pies and that's why it got popular. And then there's like the like derivative of like 20 or 30 years of bad white pies.
Yeah.
Can you give me a little bit of love for white pies and why you wanted to have a specific call out for that in the book?
Yeah. I mean, I love white pies. I think it also comes from being in a place where you're always trying to put something new on the menu and not just like executing the same thing over and over again. And tomato can be a, you know, it can be a limiting factor, you know, I mean, it's got a lot of acid in it. You know, it's, you know, obviously it's red. So if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to kind of have a different color palette, then,
sure.
So, like I love a white pie. Like one of the first, you know, kind of like pizzas, I had chefs coming in, you know, and they always had like ideas of doing things based more on like kind of French culinary traditions. And so like, you know, tart flambé is like kind of could be called kind of a pizza. So I think that's great. You know, I love the flexibility of it because you can really, you know, start, you can have different vegetables or proteins be the focus. You know, like, I mean, God, there's such a variety of white pies in the book, from the clam pie to the shrimp scampi pizza.
Shout out Charleston.
Yeah, to Charleston. Yeah, exactly. And Jonathan Caldas, who took me to Tarvin Seafood to go pick up shrimp that got right off the boat and blew my face off. I mean, it was just so good. So yeah, I mean, it's like, there's, you know, I do talk about like defining terms and like what pizza is, and pizza is dough sauce, cheese, like tomato sauce. Like there's no, every pizzeria, you know, has, you won't find a pizza that doesn't have tomato sauce, but you know, you will find white pies in almost every in pizzeria. So it's still a pizza, even though tomato is kind of the defining thing that makes pizza not flatbread or whatever. But yeah,
I mean, but I'd say I'd put it at number two as most popular. If you're looking at like a base pizza, right? It's like red and then white, and then sometimes you get a pesto or something like that.
Yeah, and then if you look historically, you know, like at, you know, like let's say like Titano's in Coney Island. I mean, one of the, you know, oldest continuously operated pizzerias in America. God, their white pie is so good, and it's just
legend.
It's legendary. It's so classic, you know. And so I think it's, yeah, definitely it deserved a shout out, you know. And personally, I love to eat a good white pie because, you know, the dough is also super important to me. So like, I always want that, like, you, if you do a really nice understated white pie, like the dough is really kind of can be, you know, like a main character as well.
Yeah. You know, a lot of characters in the book as well. And it's interesting to read a book that is an international travel book in many ways in a time when we're not traveling.
Yeah.
Because my heart hurt a little bit. I think maybe none more than the story of you in Sicily with the Fascia di Vecchia coming out of the trunk of a car.
Yeah, and that was definitely right before lockdown. That was February. So, you know, that was I had big plans to keep going back to Sicily and work on a project there, which is still, you know, a dream of mine. But yeah, I mean, that was such an incredible moment where, you know, this guy, you know, I was with a group of people and we were, you know, shooting like some film and stuff for a possible documentary. And we had a translator and she spoke standard Italian, but we were in Sicily and we were with these old guys, and they would be speaking to her, and she's like, I got to be honest, you guys, it's really hard for me to understand a lot of what they're saying. But then they would speak to each other privately, and she's like, and they are speaking straight Sicilian, and I don't understand any of it. But at some point, they were like, we heard your family came from Sicily. You know, I was like, yeah, a few generations ago, we came from this little town, Poggioreale. And they were like, do you know any Sicilian? And I was like, I only know like a few words. Like there was, you know, my great grandmother used to call me like, you know, like a Babbo Cassis, which kind of means like a dummy. And, you know, and I was like, we used to grow gagoots, you know, which is like this big squash. And he's like, okay. And then I was like, and then she used to make something called Faccia di Vecchia. And he was just like, his eyes just lit up and he was like, Faccia di Vecchia. He's like, Faccia di Vecchia, that's like our signature dish in this town. And this little car was coming through these tiny little streets, and he flags the car down right at that moment. And they open the trunk and they start talking, and the trunk is filled with Faccia di Vecchia that's still warm from the bakery.
Unreal.
And he pulls it out and I'm eating it, and it's like, you know, it's like a time machine. I mean, it's taking me back to being a little kid and eating this dish that my great grandma, because, you know, it was an isolated Sicilian community that they lived in Texas. And so they had never even heard of pizza, you know? But we started calling it pizza because it's like, yeah, it's like in a sheet pan and it's got some tomato and onion on it. And, you know, it's just kids want to eat pizza. So you call it that to get them to eat it, you know? But really what it is this dish, Faccia di Vecchia, and to go there and see that. And then I was just actually, I got vaccinated. So I went to Texas to visit my grandmother, you know, who's, you know, she's getting up there, but, I showed her this picture of this focaccia di vecchia in Sicily, and she's like, boom, there it is. That's the stuff. You know, that's what we grew up. That's what we grew up eating, you know. And
it's the full circleness now of people really understanding and appreciating their roots. I think we saw in the last couple of years with people really claiming ownership to recipes and point location and things like that. I thought that story really nailed it. Being like, this is from a specific place and time. You can understand it on one level. But if you understand the history and the people behind it, you get to understand it on another level, but it's also like part of your, who you are and your culture and like, you know, what you can share with the world.
Yeah. And you lose these things, you know, I mean, as we, like, as people travel around the world, you know, and I've seen it happen in Argentina and Brazil and other places where there's Italian diaspora, and then all kinds of other, you know, immigrant communities, is, you know, my dad didn't want to speak the language. He wanted to be an American. He was like a cowboy, you know? And then I didn't get to learn Sicilian. And then, you know, my dad became like kind of a Buddhist hippie. And so like, I didn't grow up in the Catholic Church like he did. So like, you start to kind of lose these cultural kind of connections. But the thing that you, I think most cultures and an Italian, you know, diaspora culture, the food sticks with you. We always had, we would always go, you know, to either go to my grandfather and my grandmother's house, and we would have big pasta dinners, or we would have them on Sunday. We would always do that. And, you know, when I was just down there, I was working, doing a little pop-up, and my dad came up and he brought me a food. My great grandmother made me some pasta San Giuseppe. It was recently San Giuseppe Day. And, you know, again, like, not Catholic, but pasta San Giuseppe is something that we would all make, you know? So that was like, you know, those traditions, they really stick with you. And they evolve over time and place and things like that. But like, the food traditions, you know, I mean, to me, my career in pizza, a lot of it was like trying to reconnect with that heritage, you know, from my dad's side of the family, which was, you know, really very influential when I was a kid to me.
It's amazing. Now, when you get to the level of where you are as a international pizza consultant and travel the world for work and things like that, when is it appropriate to put pizza party as reason for working or traveling on a customs form?
There's a cautionary tale there, though, involving Gatwick Airport and the Gatwick Airport jail.
They don't have a round at Gatwick, man. They do not.
Yeah. Do not tell them you're there for a pizza party if that's the case. You know, look, I recognize, you know, that as an American citizen, you know, there's a lot of privilege that comes with your passport to be able to move around the world wherever you want. You kind of just expect to be able to kind of fly around and do your job and just be like, I'm here for a pizza party. Isn't that cool? But yeah, in that particular case, I was put in check, and, you know, it's 8 hours later, everything was fine. You know, it was totally an okay and legitimate thing to be coming to do. But yeah, so I guess long story short, it's appropriate from the beginning, but, you know, try to use, I think consultant is a really just, that's a good kind of catch. I'm a consultant. I'm here to do consulting work. You're pretty much covered.
You know, look, being, and you talk about this a little bit in the beginning about like sort of people who are disruptors or outlaws or things like that being drawn to food and being able to change the world through that, you know, either in front of the bar, behind the bar, in the kitchen, you know, front of house, things like that. But sometimes you just got to know a time and place, and international customs is always an odd, maybe not the time to flex. Maybe you're just like, I'll flex when I'm out of the airport next time.
Yeah, that was an early lesson on A, British customs and B, like trying to have fun with them. Because while my job may be really fun most of the time, it's a lot of hard work, long hours, all that stuff. But it's generally a pretty fun job. Being a customs, border, that's probably not as fun. So just try to be a little thoughtful in that area. Yeah. But yeah, I usually say I'm here for consulting. Even though in my mind, it's like pizza party all the time.
Pizza party, baby. So listen, I want to make sure we have enough time for one more question.
Okay.
Congratulations on the book. And this to me, yes, it's sort of a joke, but also it's sort of serious of good advice. When is the appropriate time, if any, or level of success that one needs to have before they name a pizza after themselves?
See, the naming thing, I was never really my thing. And I had a pizza named after me very early on in my career.
And I ate a lot of it.
Yeah. I talk a little bit about this pizza, the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And that was someone else. I just happened to have a very cool sounding last name. And so someone thought that that was a good idea and they named it. And like, so for me, I would not name a pizza after myself unless someone else did it. But I mean, you know, I was definitely a rookie when it happened. So as a precedent, I think I've laid the precedent that you can go ahead and, you know, your first pizza out of the oven, you can name it after yourself if you want, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but
I'm of the mindset that you wait a little bit until you get that pizza that is like, this is unique. This really says a lot about me.
Yeah.
And then you name it after your firstborn. You don't name it after yourself.
And technically that pizza is not necessarily named after me, cause it's just, I just ripped it right off from my grandma. So,
you know,
like she's the real Millennium Falco.
Well, listen, congratulations. If people want to buy the book, check it out, follow along your adventures, where can they go?
You can go to my Instagram, which is still millennium_falco, 2 L's and 2 N's. speaking of that pizza. My website is piz.za.com /cookbook has all the different places to buy it. You know, I'm pointing people to bookshop.org because a portion of the proceeds goes to great website. Portions of proceeds go to local bookshops, but of course it's on Amazon. And if you buy it on Amazon, go ahead and drop me a review. That's apparently very helpful, but then it's going to be in bookstores everywhere May 18th.
Amazing. Well, congratulations. Thank you so much. Always sitting down with us. We always appreciate it. We have a song from the archives and then a live performance here on HRN.
This episode is presented by Chemists in the Kitchen by LabX, a new video series spotlighting the power of chemistry and how science and food can bring people together. It's a love letter to science, cooking, and individuality. In the first episode, three chemists swap cookie recipes, and once they finish baking, they ship them back to the recipe's owner. Along the way, they share insightful information on how chemistry can help you become a better baker. Watch the first episode and subscribe to the series for free at youtube.com/labxnas.
Oh, man. Hands down, one of my favorite French songs of all time. Probably my favorite French song. It's the only French song I have on my iPod.
Masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece.
Absolutely.
The Yee Yee Girls, if I remember. Yeah, yeah. Anyway. I want to welcome XNY to Snacky Tunes, who already, before they've even played a song, have just become my favorite band ever to show up because they brought ribs.
Woo! Woo!
He's like, oh, I did my research on you guys. And I go, okay. And you nailed it. These ribs are awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Why don't you introduce yourself and then we'll talk about the ribs.
I'm Jacob.
And I'm Pam.
Shout out to Damien.
Hey.
Eat pizza. What a grilly action. Listen, I said, well, say it before, say it again. Without PR and agents and things like that, our show wouldn't exist. So hats off to you. You've gotten us out of so many jams.
Which is amazing. I know.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
We're the best.
Girly action, represent.
What's up? So I know we're supposed to talk about the music, but talk to me about these ribs. Because no one's ever brought us ribs before. We got pulled pork from John at Dinosaur Barbecue.
Okay, no, I almost did pulled pork.
No, these are great. I love ribs. Who doesn't? The tactile feeling of eating ribs is like amazing.
No, it's internal. That's how food is supposed to be eaten, mm-hmm. where you just like grab it and gets everywhere, and then you kind of like feel bad, but not really, and you keep going.
That's the point.
Keep yeah, it.
Don't
it's supposed
clean it.
To be dirty.
I'm gonna clean it. I'm gonna barbecue
on
my leg.
Lick it off.
But you won a barbecue rib competition.
It wasn't like anything big. It was like it was...
okay. Let me. Did you compete against other people making ribs?
Yes, I did.
Did you win?
I did.
Then that's great.
Then yeah, I fucking killed it.
Yeah. Don't sell yourself short. These are great. There's a lot of sauce. Ooh, these are good.
Yeah, I like sauce a lot.
Do you get the benefits of his cooking?
Yeah, that's all I do.
Awesome.
That's why he's in the band.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tryouts weren't so much of how well you could drum, but if you could, like, make ribs.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You keep Pam fed, she stays happy.
Yeah, it's true. I'm very hungry right now. That's why,
yeah.
But I keep staring at it and I really want it.
We always do that with bands. We're like, oh, hey, here's some lactose. Do you want to just eat some cheese before you go to sleep? So how did you two meet? How did you get together?
We were living in Boston where Jacob won the ribboff, and
Boston.
we were next door neighbors, and we actually met because he was playing very loudly with his drum set next door, and I told him to shut up, and so we need to play together instead, which worked. And then he made a deal with me because apparently he was stealing my internet, and he said, listen, if I steal your internet, can I make you dinner like once or twice a month?
It was like a trade-off. I was like,
hell yeah.
I was like, I don't want to pay for internet, but I'll cook you dinner, because Pam just pretty much lives off of peanut butter jelly and pretzels.
And now ribs.
It's true.
And now ribs.
But now we moved in together, so now I just get food all the time.
Are you two together?
No.
No.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe. Not really, kind
of. Are we?
Who
are we
knows?
Related?
I don't know. Look, I mean, you're stealing her internet, you're making her meals, you're living in together, you're playing a band together.
We have children together.
Yeah.
Look, we sleep at the same bed. It's head to toe, top sheet, bottom sheet. That's great. Oh, Boston. I don't miss you that much.
At all.
I never think about it.
When I graduated from BU, I left the next day, and I've been back for maybe 18 hours for, like, work.
Yeah.
It's 24
hours. 24
hours. Not even.
You
I would say 23 hours. If you're there for 24 hours,
we actually went there, and we told each other, we're not going to stay here for more than 24 hours. In about hour 22... Pam calls me at like 7 in the morning and was like, we need to get the fuck out of here. And we did.
Out.
We couldn't even do 24 hours.
I go there, I get like Anna's Taqueria. And I'm like, what do I even want to do here?
Exactly. You have to be there for a reason. And that's a good one.
That's Anna's Taqueria.
It's a good reason.
The band that we had in last week was from Boston. They were great. They were a lot of fun.
Who
There's
was
a whole
it?
New, like,
yeah,
Boston.
What was it?
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter who it was because they're from Boston.
Shit, fam. Can't say that. That's a major
city.
I mean,
I don't know what it is about Boston
that just
sucks.
It's totally true. People really like. I have a real just problem with. I don't know. Like the winters are really tough. The people are really mean.
Yeah.
I
mean, Pam and I We ended our education early to get out of there.
Where did you guys go to school?
We were at Berkeley, and after like 2 years, both of us were just like,
no.
No, done.
It's the city. I mean, I think that they would have a lot more.
I think if they stay to open past 8 p.m.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like the curfew, city curfew.
Well, the band last week, Karl Marx, they're like part of like the new music trend. There's like a whole new scene. I mean, like there is camaraderie, but I think it's camaraderie in the shittiness of Boston.
I completely agree with you.
I mean, there's some good food up there. Like Jamie Bissonette's places are great, but like,
not good enough.
No, it's not like the way that like Philly has gotten its own scene now.
Philly is great awesome. Food.
And I used to feel that way about Philly, like because that's where I grew up. I was like, I'm never going back there. I'm like, oh, I love this town. Like it's got its own identity. Boston's just like
it's like a city of almost. Almost.
That's yep.
Almost.
Yeah.
That was almost good.
Oh, okay. Well, you know it's gonna be great. What? When you play a song for us right now.
Ooh, stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Segue.
Okay.
Wait, is Jacob? Jacob's still eating pizza. No, okay.
He's good.
Let's do it.
This whole show is about sneaking in bites of pizza. So what's the first song that we got?
I think we're gonna play Jaw. Are we?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
No, you do it.
I mean, you can do it. Please. Please do it.
So here's Jaw by XNY live on Snacky Tunes, the pizza remix.
Yeah, as I munch on pizza icing.
Yeah, okay.
Set me on fire, my lover and I had a hard few nights. Getting used to the bite, I'm a shark now. Got a switchblade tucked into my teeth. It's a sharp trade for a faulty grenade. I'm a quick thief. Who's to say I'm making friends with the monuments? I'm not the same as your brother. Who's to say I'm making friends with the monuments? I'm yet to see a single man do more than me. Oh! Eat me alive. I've got a knife to my throat. Now I hope you like me, it's right. How I come for the choke and I live for the fight. I'm a knight, huh? Come to me close so I know you know. Take a bite. Rah! Never be more than a rat in my jaw. No!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's some good stuff.
Thanks.
Man, a lot of voice coming out of that.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of voice coming out of this thing. There's a lot of food going into it. You know?
A lot of food going in, a lot of voice coming out. So what do you guys love about playing with each other? You guys seem to have like a really good connection. You guys seem to be friends.
Oh, yeah.
Real good friends.
Yeah?
We
yeah.
built this friendship.
From stolen internet, right?
From stolen internet.
Oh, can I ask what the network name was? Was it something funny?
No, it was like Atari. That's how you knew it was me. It's my last name.
Oh.
It wasn't.
Now our internet name is Funkatron or something.
Planet Funkatron.
Planet Funkatron.
That's good. I feel like there's a whole humor sect of wireless names.
Yeah, there. Somebody in our building, it goes really hog wild with it, where like
they change it every day.
Like every week, it's just, it's new, and it's usually like current with what's going on.
I feel like that's the new answering machine message.
Right, yeah.
It's like the wireless connection.
Yeah,
oh, totally.
It's really short, and only a few people really can appreciate the creativity that goes into it.
So once you guys got the fuck out of Boston, you knew you were coming to New York?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Bright Lights Big City?
Yeah.
That just drew you?
I think it was just because there's more than two music venues in New York. I'm really dizzy.
Yeah,
Boston.
You're going.
It's totally fine.
I feel like it's like a bitter lover. I'm like, you really betrayed me.
I have no love lost for that city.
Okay, good. I'm so glad.
Like, the only good view of Boston is in the rearview mirror.
Do you know that sign that says U-turn to Boston?
It's right next
to you. Do you think anyone
takes
it? It's right next to you.
Yeah.
Right when you're heading out, there's this giant sign. It's just like, U-turn to Boston. You can go out, and it'll take you to Cambridge, and we're always just like, fuck no.
So you came to New York. You live close to here, right?
Yeah, we live off Graham.
Okay. Well, don't say where you live.
I know, I was just taking it back. No one really cares. Please come. We need friends.
So how long have you been in the city?
2 years now.
Yeah, 2 years.
You liking it?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's fun.
So what community, like, what's who are your colleagues in the music world? Like, who you jamming with? Who you gigging with?
Ooh.
As they say.
Ooh, do they say that?
I don't know, maybe in the 80s. Maybe we'll check out LaFooding if they said gigging. who are you playing with?
We play with a lot of different people. We're still, like, we really play a lot of New York shows, and we're starting our tour in the spring to do some bigger stuff, which we're doing, like, without any other bands, really. So it's
yeah,
like,
we're getting a lot of help from Silent Lions, which is an Ohio-based band. They're kind of like Road Warriors, where they just are playing constantly.
Constantly gigging on the road.
Yeah, just like living out of a van type of thing.
Does that hold any desire for you two?
Living out of a van?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely does. Yeah, we just don't have a van. We have a four-door sedan, which is great for regional.
Well, it's just the two of you, right?
Yeah.
And how much gear do you have?
I mean, not a lot. It's pretty much my drum set, and then Pam has two guitars and an amp. So it's not too much.
Lot.
It fills the car up, for sure.
No, I guess your vehicle also doubles as possibly where you're crashing at times.
Yeah, we've definitely had several nights, like, trying to push the two front seats back as much as we could.
Yeah, and we stayed at this one place. This person that came to our show, we were like, hey, we really need a place to crash, and we went. And it was the most bizarre sleeping experiment. The van.
What,
yeah,
are
that
you
was
talking
great.
About?
I'm talking about, we slept in a basement, and the person that we slept, who let us sleep there, was sleeping on the couch, and like, they let us sleep in their bed, which is in the basement. This sounds very, very sketchy. It is. And the person said, you know, I have to sleep with the TV on. It's just comforting to me. So we're like, okay, fine, whatever. So we wake up at like 2 a.m. and it's a channel of Jesus Christ, and like, all about Jesus.
Really religious.
I mean, it was the most frightening thing to try to sleep to, and we both just sat there and tossed and turned all night, thinking, "How are we going to shut this off?" And we couldn't figure out how to shut it off.
She had it on. It wasn't just on though; it was like at max volume.
Yeah.
So, and it was a big screen TV, like an old school.
But she was at your show.
Yes.
Yeah. But she was passed out. She was fine. But
passed
we were
out because she was comforted.
Yeah, she was comforted
TV.
By the warm embrace of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and we were like having nightmares, and we were like, oh my gosh, I think I'm dying tonight.
Yeah.
We need to get out of here. And we left at 5.
We did. It was another, we need to get the hell out of here.
You know, you start to realize when you do those type of things, like if you go on tour, you do like a lot of crashing with people, is the really, really just like unique way that a lot of people sleep.
Yeah.
And how you realize you only, I mean, look, everyone sleeps next to like, what, like a dozen people in their life? If it's not some like drunken pass out or something like that. But like, when you're like, what? It's like, yeah, they had the bathtub running all night and like their parakeet was chirping and they were asleep. But what keeps me awake is like those old clocks where you can hear the second hand moving.
Oh, it sounds interesting.
I don't know what it is. And like people fall asleep. I was like, isn't it so loud? Like, can you not hear that?
Wait, that keeps you...
Keeps me up.
Oh, keeps you awake.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're saying it keeps you asleep. Yeah, like, that no is way. Really like creepy. Counting sheep
or no something. No way. It's like anxiety. It's like, here's the second. Thinking,
wow, time is really going by, and I'm not doing anything right now. What am I going to do?
Sleep?
That's, I'm dying right was now.
Pam has a lot of death thoughts while she's trying to go to bed.
Are you cooking on the road at all? Do you, like, what's your food game like?
Cooking on the road,
making peanut butter and sandwiches.
Yeah, we do a lot of packing. You know, I actually have this weird thing. I never eat fast food ever, just, you know, because it makes me
never.
Feel sick. But for some reason, well, like when you're drunk, it doesn't really count. I don't think it is because it like Taco Bell becomes that like, stuff the makes, sacred food.
I'll put this way, that stuff makes me feel worse than drinking.
Oh,
like
fast
when
food?
I eat that stuff late at night.
Yeah, it's horrible.
When I go for fourth meal, terrible.
Feels good going down, but
fourth meal.
But, like, when we go on the road, I have this tradition where I have to eat at McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know what? So, I totally understand.
I don't know what it is, and I always regret it.
What's your order? What do you get?
I always get the two cheeseburgers with the small fry and a large iced tea.
That's a good order.
And I put the fries on the cheeseburgers.
Ooh.
I know.
I have to
it
do
looks
it.
Looks so good. I can't do it because I love fries, and I can't. And their fries just taste like plastic to me.
Yeah. I'm a, like, if I go to McDonald's, I get I get a large vanilla shake and like a giant fry, and that's what I'll eat. It's awful. I mean, like...
Do you ever go to Wendy's and dip the fries
in the Frosty? Totally.
It's like the salty and sweet thing. I don't know what it does. It's
a big move.
You guys both sound like you're PMSing.
Really?
As you're talking about this.
I have been feeling bloated lately.
Yeah. And my emotions have been running out of control. All right. In honor of me needing some comforting music while I menstruate, why don't we have you play another song?
All right. We'll do it.
What do you have? Cure for the Cramps. What do you got?
Ooh, Cure for the Cramps.
Yeah, it's a freebie if you need a song title.
Okay. Cure for the Cramps goes out to... Should we do Rotten?
Is
that a good title to go for Cure for the Cramps?
Yeah.
Or Ride On?
Ride On, yeah.
All right, we'll do Rotten.
Okay.
Cover me and drag my bones. My lover told me I was headed home. Where'd you go? I gathered all your favorite things. I told you I felt nothing. I was headed home. Where'd you go? How long can you keep this up? How far to feel anything? You had to go, I knew you had to. I know you think it's bad for you. I think it's bad for me. My mouth is full of cotton. My mind is rotten. I walk on nails every day just to keep bad thoughts away. The nights are getting harder to fight. I smother my pride. I hope you might be hoping that I might. It's easy for you, it's easy for you. I don't have the drugs to keep me quiet, quiet. It's easy for you, it's easy for you. I don't have the drugs to keep me quiet, quiet. How long can you keep this up? How far do you feel anything? You had to go, I know you had to. I know you think it's bad for you. I think it's bad for me. Whoa, you never look better. Oh.
back. Why did you go like that? Why did you love me and never look back? Why did you go like that? Why did you go like that? Why did you go like that? Why did you love me? Why did you love me?
Epic.
Oh, thank Man. You. Wow.
That's so great.
Wonderful.
So cool.
I'm so glad that you're liking it. Would you say if you weren't, though? It's like Boston?
No, I'm pretty, you know.
Obvious.
No, I mean, look, we don't book things that we don't like on the show.
It's
a very good litmus test. Like, if you're on the show, we'd like you.
Oh, that's so nice.
I don't know. That's our agenda.
The same goes for us with
awesome.
You.
Thank you. Well, we know that we all love ribs and we hate Boston.
I know. I think we're on a good first date.
Man, I have to say, I know I keep harping on this. We talk so much shit on Boston this show.
I know.
I would say every, like, at least like every couple of weeks, it's just like, fuck that place.
Yeah.
I think it's good to talk shit about it.
Because people love it.
What all right. If it's the
well, no, we got to stop. We got to stop. So you guys are going on the road. Yes. What cities are you going to hit?
We're hitting all of the above.
All the above? A through D.
All of it.
Yeah. A through D. Is this your first like big tour?
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. You got to take off work, right?
Oh, yeah.
How many weeks do you take? You go on the road for?
I don't know. Oh, like, I think three.
We'll probably be taking three off, yeah.
Yeah.
Do the people at... We won't say where you work, but it's a very suit and tie professional place. Do they know about your musical?
They do, and they're very supportive of it, kind of.
Well, I bet you there's a lot of people who are there who just like, man, I gave up my...
I admit, they all come to me secretly while I'm like at the front. Like, I do reception, right?
So yeah.
I'll be at the front, they'll come to me and be like, you know, I play piano.
I'm like, so ashamed.
Really? And they're like, yeah, I stopped playing 5 years ago. The job. I was like, the job. This is so, it's all about the job.
Oh, I bet you they use the word gig.
They totally use the word
totally.
Gig.
They totally. It's like, oh, you got a gig tonight?
Yeah, and they're really, and they get smile like you're smiling.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's a lot of, I know a lot of people who had a lot of love for musical instruments, and they get into those jobs where they're 60, 70 hours a week, and the family.
And the money. It's all about the money.
It is all about the money.
That's what I've learned.
Really?
Yeah, it's like everyone's in it for the money.
No one likes their job where you work?
I think some people do, but I think that it's, at the end of the day, it's like, holy crap, I can get a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of jobs that are based in, you know, finance and things like that, I mean, the ultimate goal is to make as much money as possible, and they don't really care, as we've seen.
But that starts to make them happy, so then they like their job.
Yeah, you know? I guess. Ugh.
I know. Isn't it hell to think about?
It's a mind fuck.
It's a mind fuck.
It's a total mind fuck. Well, at least they know about it. At least you're not trying to keep it a secret.
Yeah, I went into it and I was like, listen, I'm a musician. And then they hired me, which I was like, wow, that worked. And I think it's because they knew that I would just be okay with doing really shitty work.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, I do all the business.
She's an artist. She can get coffee.
Make her clean out that closet.
Yeah. Hey, could you do your artist music thing to the copier room? Do they ever make you perform at the company parties?
No, I skipped the last one. I think we had a gig, so I didn't
No.
Make it.
Oh!
I know.
You got a gig.
No, oh, do you know what it was? I remember you were seeing Beyonce.
I was seeing Beyonce. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Because I was like, listen, you guys, I can't make it. I'm going to see Beyonce. And they're like, okay, fine.
No one was excited that you were seeing Beyonce?
I mean, there were a couple of people, but they were jealous.
Right.
Companies are run on jealousy. To be honest.
You know, I have to say, at my new company, I don't think there's jealousy.
Really?
That's yeah.
a good company, then.
They're really good. Shout out to Refinery 29. Holding
Shout
me down.
Out. Yeah.
No, it's great. Refinery 29. They're the best. They have a no mean girls policy.
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
There aren't really mean girls at this one.
No. I can't imagine working in a place like that. LaFootie isn't like that.
Are you a mean girl? Disappointed?
Do I seem like a mean girl?
I mean, I feel like if I put on a wig on you, you'd be kind
of
mean.
I don't know. I really just. I mean,
have you ever dressed in drag?
If I were dressed in drag, I did dress in drag once.
And were you mean?
No, I used to do. All right, fine. I used to do theater in high school.
Okay.
And like, I did carpentry, The third night of every performance was like the prank night, and so myself and this other guy named Judah Dickstein. Also Jewish, just in case you were wondering, Judah Dixon. You're supposed to wear all black when you're changing sets, and we didn't say anything. We just both showed up in drag, like changed sets, like just did our job exactly the same.
God.
And so like we would come out and move sets, and we were in dresses.
That's
and,
awesome.
Like, it took people a little bit of time because it was dark and we were wearing black. But then like after like the second, third time, people like saw that like we were wearing like stuffed bras and like panties.
That's really, awesome. Really
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the only time. Because I was like, how am I going to top that? Because I'm not really a Halloween guy.
Yeah.
Are you a Halloween people?
Not really.
Yeah.
I used to get really into it. Not really, though.
I was Pam, the cooking spray once.
Oh, that was my favorite. That was actually
like
one
top,
thing.
And then I just didn't.
That's when
get
I knew
there.
That I liked Pam, like, off the bat, is I.
That's
like,
a great pun.
We friended each other, and I saw, like, a picture on her Facebook, and she's dressed as Pam, and I was like, boom.
Friends.
Man, I could keep talking for forever, but I want to get one more song in before we run out of time.
Okay, sure. Definitely.
But you guys can stick around. We got pizza to eat.
I know. I have to have a slice.
You should have to have more than a slice, because I'm super full, because I ate literally every station at Taste Talk, and then I'm going to the Cook It Raw thing afterwards. And then I'm going to go home.
Are they cooking or is it raw?
I don't know. It's a really big to-do, and I'm like, I should read up on about it before I go, and I just have
do
not.
Do you think it's raw?
I think there's a lot of foraging. I don't know.
I feel like
is
most,
it raw and cooked?
I feel like most food starts off raw before you cook it.
I don't know. Maybe it's they're wearing like unwashed denim, and it's like raw denim. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Damon, you got to send me the album. One track is just not going to do it.
You got it.
Where can people find you online? What are the nuts and bolts?
XNYmusic.com is our website, and then Facebook is facebook.com/XNYofficial, because there are people that try to be us.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a company in China that makes watches. And
based on us.
And is trying to take our name.
Yeah.
And then all your tour dates are up there and everything. Do you guys have like a band camp or where people get the album?
We have the band camp. It's on our website.
Okay.
Under music, and you can buy the album off there or on iTunes. If you just type in XNY, it'll come up.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's all letters. XNY. There's a lot of, is it X
It's great. That's some good Googleability, right?
Yeah. Totally.
Optimized SEO.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I mean, we have bands on here that's like the summer, you know? Or like Hugo Boss. That'd be a great band name, but.
That would be.
That'd be
a great start that band.
My days of being in music groups, so it's the job. Got no time to be in a band. Got no time to be a DJ anymore.
I want to name my band Cooked Raw.
Ooh.
Cooked Raw.
Wait, did you just break up the band?
I think we just broke up.
Oh, shit.
Uh-oh.
You and I are starting a band.
As long as my part of the band could be, like, percussion sounds with me eating ribs and then dropping the bones on the plate. Yeah.
Dropping the bones on the plate. That's a great line.
Yeah.
That's a good
That should be the title of your album.
No, that should be... Put that in your next song. Put the...
Yeah, I'm dropping the bones on the plate.
Like, the tears that drop from my face were, like, the bones you drop on the plate.
Oh, my God.
That's great. That's a good breakup lyric.
Yeah. There you go.
It's like, who are you dating? That sounds intense.
Oh, I got a great girlfriend. She's a writer. I credit, she never likes the stuff I write for her, though. I'm like, babe, put this in your next article. She's like, ugh. Shut up with your 24 hours of puns and terrible jokes. Well, listen, I want to thank you guys. This is awesome. Totally love the Sunday show.
It's really relaxing.
Super vibes. Yeah. It's going to be really nice in the winter, too, because they bring in, if you can't see it, but in Roberta's, they bring in this, like, wood fire burning oven.
Oh.
And just relax. We'll get all snug up in the shipping containers. Well, I want to shout out everybody, Heritage Radio, Roberta's. Greg and I are taking next week off. He's going to be in London still. And I'm going out to Feast with Mike Thielen, which was one of my favorite episodes this year. He and I just talked for an hour and a half. No musical breaks. It was great.
Was it only your favorite episode?
I don't know.
Listeners like it.
I don't know. We should ask our 6 listeners. And 7 if you count our mom. I know. I don't know. If you like us, just find us at Snacky Tunes and just tell us that you're out there listening.
I like you.
I know. You brought me ribs. I really like you. And of course, shout out to Girly Action.
Yeah. Woo woo.
Always. So thank you. And Anna, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for teaching me how to say things in French. All right, so what's the last song you're going to take us out on?
We're going
to
play Right On.
Right On.
Right On.
All right, so here we go. X and Y, Right On, live with Snacky Tunes. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Alan Salkin, who just wrote a tell-all book on the Food Network. It's amazing. I'm like almost done with it. There's some shit that went down.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I've heard it's kind of a crazy environment back there.
Yeah, I mean that's the environment that I left to take this.
Wow.
It's nuts. And you read the book and you go like, oh, trying to sell TV shows is nuts.
Wow.
But it's a great book. And Alan Salkin, I told him, he was on here years ago. And he's like, why can't I come back on? And I was like, when you finish your book. So we're having him back on.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't budge. I drew a line in the sand. I was like, just finish your fucking book already.
Is it like a Kitchen Confidential part 2?
No, I mean, it's really a biography of it, but it's great. If you really want to learn, I mean, if you have any interest in the Food Network, it's a must read. If you have any interest in, like, television or just that type of stuff, it's great. They have all the heavy hitters. Everyone's been interviewed.
Awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Man, I'm just dragging this out. I don't want to end. All right, here we go. Right On, X and Y, on Snacky Tunes. We'll see you in a couple weeks. And if you're going to be out in Portland for Feast, find me online. We'll say hi. We'll do a high five. All right. Take it away.
I don't know if I can change the world. I was helpless a mile ago. Well, I'm just about to end it all, and here I am looking for a way out. It took a heavy heart to hold me down. I was running blind, I was leaving all your secrets. Now I long to keep them far away from you and all your demons. Take a look. It'll do you good. It's not for you, it's for the children. We're keeping time on all your baby rhymes. It's better if we kill them. If we get out, it's not about us, it's for them. I swear to God. And I'm not good for you. I got trouble I can't speak of, I can't keep to myself, and I'm not used to you. I got bigger things to do. I'll grow up just for the fear of getting bitter. It's like a drug, I hold my tongue and let my mind get bigger. It's bound to get me by if they think I'm gonna die, 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 die. Hey, haha, were you bound to me? Were you? Were you chained up like a dog in heat? I can't believe you bite my legs and tie my feet and tell me run. I got
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.